Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
Hi, my name is Maria Castro. I'm a community organizer with People United for Justice, and I'm also a member of Fuente Human Rights Movement.
I am. And so for those who don't know, tell us about the action you were involved in the other night in Phoenix.
Yeah. So Lupita Garcia de Rayos was a victim of Arpaio's illegal raid in 2008. And those raids, now the federal court has declared them illegal, and so every year Lupita has gone in to check in with ICE, and they have granted her every year permission to stay in the country one additional year, and every year it's the same except for this year. This year we had Lupita walk in with the priest from her congregation and an attorney. And this time it was different. This time she was put into removal proceedings, meaning deportation. And I think we sugarcoat it, right, by calling it these things, making it very procedural. But actually, that night she was kidnapped from her family. And there are many of us in the community that took action. We have been waiting outside in vigil for Lupita in hopes that the director Carter would have released her. But unfortunately, because of Trump's new executive orders, she, very much like 8 million other people, are now high priority for deportation. And so I remember I was standing on the sidewalk and started to see vans leaving. And this is not the first time, right, that we as community activists in Arizona have done this kind of work. A couple of years ago, I was sitting in front of a bus, you know, in August in 2013. And then a few months later, in a different facility, we chased down a bus, and the person who we were fighting for was snuck out in a van. And so learning from these things, we knew that they had a bus at the front of the facilities, and we knew that that was a decoy in order to get us confused. And so we chased the vans, and myself and about half a dozen people jumped in front, and we were being pushed. The vans were literally pushed me at least 30 feet, hyperextending my knees, hurting some of my friends, knocking some of my fellow organizers down to the ground. And it wasn't until we had one of the vehicles in front of the vans, and then another person started to hug the wheels and put his own life at risk, because this is just the beginning. This is the beginning of the militarized removal of our communities, of our families, and of our loved ones. The people in these vans who were driving them were very highly equipped with weapons. When the people who they're deporting aren't a threat, right? They're family members.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, obviously this has been, you guys have been building a network to do things like this for a while. So can you tell us a little bit about the background of the work you've been doing in you know, Arpaio land has been ground zero for the deportation machine for a while.
Yeah. So on January 20th, everyone woke up in Arizona, you know, across the nation.
Right.
We've been living with a legislature that is constantly defunding education and prioritizing its residents for deportation. We live in a state and in a county where the sheriff did what as he pleased and dismissed the federal government, dismissed the Constitution, dismissed our basic human rights. And once we heard that Trump was elected,
yeah,
it was a bittersweet moment because that night we had also defeated one of the biggest villains that we have seen, the Bull Connor of our time.
Right.
And we had to celebrate, but at the same time we began to prepare. And so as many organizers did during the raids of Arpaio, people have been starting to form what we call defense committees all across the state. You know, as organizers here in Arizona and across the nation, we've developed different tactics in order to fight the deportation machine.
Right.
Whether it's national organizing or local organizing, contacting our senators, whatever it may be. And we've been able to delay or stop some people's deportation
right.
by intervening on in different phases. But right now, our priority has been to decrease the amount of initial contact that our people are having with law enforcement. Under this administration, we had different tools at our fingertips. But right now, Trump has taken away our tools. There is no more discretion as we used to use. And so our people need to arm themselves as best as they can by knowing their rights, by having plans in case, you know, things go bad like it went with the pizza. You know, we have to have these very difficult conversations. We are not just having these fire drills, right, of deportation. We are having to plan and have difficult conversations, like with my mom. My mother is undocumented. And I've had to sit down and talk to her and say, what do you want to do? She and I are raising my younger sister together. We have to figure out what's going to happen. Are we going to have my little sister, you know, go to Mexico with my mom? Or is Azucena going to stay here with me? And so these are just some of the conversations that we have to prepare for while we build our tools. Because as of right now, all we have is trying to protect each other from having that initial conversation with law enforcement.
So in terms of these kinds of direct actions in resistance, they're a worst case scenario, but at the same time, you guys have had some success with those in the past, correct?
Yeah, and like I said, we were equipped with different tools under a different administration.
Right.
And not only are we under attack by the 45, not only are we under attack by 45, but, you know, it's even more hurtful for us and our resistance to have weak politicians who give opportunistic speeches, who confuse our community, and simply and quite frankly do absolutely nothing. And by doing nothing, they are empowering the Trump administration. They are enabling the deportation and the kidnapping of our family members. And really making it difficult for us in our organizing, having to re-explain to folks, actually, your mayor doesn't care. Actually, your mayor has been deporting you in mass amounts. Mayor Greg Stanton came out and said, I will not allow the new administration in Washington, D.C. to turn our police department into a mass deportation force. But what he failed to mention was that the Phoenix Police Department is already a mass deportation force, one of the biggest deportation forces in the country. And for us, it's a slap in the face. But it also means that we have to work harder. It also means that we have to work on educating our community. And I think it needs to be replicated everywhere in the country. We need to make sure that we are forcing our elected officials to take big and bold stances, because we are not in a time where speeches are going to be enough. We are constantly under attack, and we need bold moves. That is what is required in order for us to survive this administration, and our elected officials who do not do that are enabling the administration. So we need them to declare sanctuary. We need them to change policy and make concrete and bold moves. And we also need our communities to come outside. I can't stress that enough. I feel like we've gotten comfortable over the years with the organizing that we've done in the past. You know, sharing things on Facebook is good. It's important for us to help expand the visibility of our actions. But what is necessary is our feet on the ground and our feet to be marching and for us to be constantly resisting. And I'm not saying just for immigration, right? I think it's our Mother Earth is under attack. If you feel passionate about working against the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline, if you're passionate about women's rights, if you're passionate about LGBT rights, Muslim rights, the rights of the working class, whatever it may be, I think this is a moment where we need to pick ourselves up and choose where we're standing. We can't sit down anymore.
Yeah. And so in terms of sort of specific things, you mentioned stopping the bus before. Can you talk about some of the past direct actions that you've done and how, I guess, how people could plug into that, people could be part of that?
Yeah, I think it's important to be grounded in community first and foremost. I think it's very easy to identify like an action, right? Like when we did a couple of years ago, we jumped in front of a bus, the main national news. But what's important is identifying the needs of our community, right? And in this moment, our communities are being kidnapped out of their homes, out of the workplaces, off the street. And we need to do whatever is necessary to protect them and make sure that we are being safe and bold and brave. And in some spaces, depending on the conditions, right, like in some more liberal states, you may be able to do more, and you should do more, because that is what is required of us. So in some places, it may look like sitting in front of a bus. In other places, it may look like locking down to a facility. In other places, it might look like vigils and creating sanctuary spaces. I think it just like all depends on the setting. But what's vital and necessary is that you do something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so since Trump's election, we've seen massive protests. We've seen some 4 million people in the streets for the Women's March. We saw people rushing to airports in response to the Muslim ban. And how do people get connected to these networks? Because I think there's the airport thing in particular showed that people are willing to take some risks to defend people in their communities, even people that they don't know. But I think there is still, met in many cases, just a division. People don't know who to talk to about what the needs are. People don't know how to connect in order to be able to take action. What is some advice that you have for building these networks out and for introducing people who maybe went to their first protest at the Women's March to what they can do in their community to defend people who are facing deportation?
There are organizations in your community. The thing is that you have to identify them. And if you're in a small town and you recognize that actually there isn't an organization, then it's important that you start one and that you get in communication with other organizations across your state and across the country. I think that with the new attacks on our communities, they have shifted the status quo. So then it is our move, and we are the ones who have to disrupt business as usual. We are the ones who have to stop them from carrying out the atrocities that the administration is trying to do. And so whatever organization you are joining, whatever protest you are joining, whatever organization you are creating, you must do everything in your power to be a cog in the system. Because the system is not working for us. It is working against us. And so marching in the streets is powerful when we are doing it in masses. And if you feel that you cannot bring thousands of people out, then do something else. Talk to your legislators. Go making sure that everybody is divesting from a specific bank, whatever target that you choose, making sure that you are doing it coordinated with national organizations. But like I said, we all have to do our part. We all have to identify what pieces we're feeling passionate about. And I think when we are resisting, it is key for us to identify something that we're passionate about to resist, because this is a long fight. And it doesn't end with Trump. And it didn't start with Trump.
Right.
Because the Obama administration deported close to 3 million people. Trump is just one-upping him, right?
Yeah.
And he is continuing to use the tools that Obama and Bush and Clinton laid out for him.
Yeah.
It didn't start on election day. It didn't start on inauguration day. But if it started for you that day, then you need to continue and be ready for the long haul.
And since, of course, it did not start with Trump and you guys were living under the reign of Joe Arpaio, talk a little bit about his actual defeat this year in the election and what that says for the changing politics in places like Arizona.
Yeah. So the fight against Arpaio has been a very long one, in one in which we have lost an incredible amount of members of our community. It is a fight that has been carried out with multiple angles and different methods of resistance. There have been everything from mass protests with hundreds of people flooding the street. There have been lawsuits that have been filed. There have been divestment campaigns. There have been arrests and civil disobediences. And after 10 long years of resistance, we were able to develop a campaign, a hybrid campaign, in which we highlighted the atrocities that he was going through and bringing into our community, but we were also highlighting the strength and the power in our community. And it was both an electoral and direct action campaign called Basta Arpaio. And during this campaign, we were feeling the energy of the community. At this point, after 10 years of mobilizing and organizing, it wasn't just us, the community organizers and membership. It was the entire county of Arizona resisting against Arpaio, lifting up their businesses, lifting up their community organizations, getting together, walking out of school, everything. And so we were very happy to see our pile go. And we want to make it clear to the new sheriff, Paul Prendone, that he did not win the election. We defeated right. our pile.
So lastly, can you, I mean, first, how can people keep up with you and the work that you guys are doing in Arizona, but also what are some national networks that people could get plugged into that might help them find work that they can do in their communities?
Yeah, definitely. So I am currently organizing with People United for Justice. There's an organization that is bringing together people who are vulnerable, particularly under this administration, and resisting through electoral campaigns and working in the state legislature. Because, like I said, people will look in Arizona, but we still live in Arizona, and we have our difficult politics. Before Trump came out strong against sanctuary cities, the Arizona State Legislature had already made moves to outlaw the sanctuary cities. And so we are not only under attack by the Trump administration, we are not only under attack by Congress, we are not only under attack by our governor, but also our state legislature and the inaction of our city council and mayor have made it even more difficult. You can definitely follow us on Facebook, as well as Sprinting, Working on Developing, the defense committees all across the state, in order for us to be able to amplify the support that we can create and also amplify the resistance that is necessary under this administration and the state government. You can follow us there. Nationally, there is an organization called a network called Gente. They're doing a lot of great work. There's also Cosecha, an organization that's working on a general strike. And then there's United We Dream, an organization that works primarily with migrant youth all across the nation. And they have chapters almost in every state.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Faillebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.